Well, today I just feel like we're going to use today's lesson. We're going to change it just a little bit, I guess, because I don't see one single person in this class, and I wouldn't have seen it if it had been full. You know, all the places would have been full, but this would have been something that you aren't just richly blessed with already. I do like to do types of word study sometimes. I know that a lot of people think the computers are really evil, but they really are good. They're really good because you have at the end of your fingertips the ability to pull up, you know, and I'm not going to read all 1,000,000,000 things about this particular word. But I like it because it gives you your thoughts as well as other thoughts. And today we're going to do a study on integrity. You don't hear that very often because it's one of those things that you sort of expect. But in growing up, I don't know if I knew what to call it. I just knew it was do the right thing, and that's what my people use a lot. Just do the right thing. Why am I doing that? Just do the right thing. And there's a phone. I guess Stan's here though, isn't he? And you grew up that way. I was able to put a lot of things that were right and wrong into the teacher just by telling my kids, you know, you're not supposed to really talk about religion very much in school to them. You're just supposed to, but you have character things that you can build all the time. They'd say, why to do so and so? And I'd say, just do the right thing. And the class would just say, just do the right thing. You know it's the right thing. Just do the right thing. And so today's word is integrity. I think the older you get, the more you go back to a lot of how you were raised and where you were. And I've certainly been blessed throughout my entire life to have been raised the way I think I was raised. And I think you would think the same thing. We didn't have a lot of things that were essential now. I didn't have a running bathtub water until I went to college. Carried that tub in and out just like a trooper. I think I've always been proud of that, though, because I've always been very strong. And I think a lot of it was from taking that tub and carrying it in and out. Since I would cheat and, you know, drag it, that kind of thing. But integrity was something, I don't remember using the word integrity, but it was just mother saying, because it's right. Here comes somebody. Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome. I think we're crowded, but you just maybe can find a seat.
We're a little light today.
A little bit light today, but just in number, not in love and what we're talking about. I was thinking today, I like them. There we go. Thank y'all for coming. Integrity is a word, if I was to give it a color, I think red would have been the color growing up. If I'd known that was actually called integrity, I thought it was called do the right thing. But today I think I've changed it to pink in because of cancer awareness color. Because a lot of times this room would just be solid pink in here. You couldn't even see where you were going. It would be so pink because you're certainly a room full of people with integrity. And that's a real comfort for me to come somewhere where, you know, everybody sitting there is doing the right thing 99.9% of the time. And, you know, I'm going to go to a store after a little bit, I guess I shouldn't call names, and I'm not going to think that there's that many people doing the wrong thing. But character is given from God, and God knows everything about us. He knows how we feel. When we look in the mirror, He knows what we're thinking about, and when no one else is around, He knows what we're thinking about. Character comes when we are all alone. Character is built when we have choices to make. And our children today in school are taught to just say no to drugs or just do the right thing is what I call this particular thing for it. In the dictionary, let's see, there's synonyms for integrity, and it's honesty and unity. The word integrity is related to what other words? It could be just a multitude of things, that a strength of character that you have. Okay. Definition of it is, though, just exactly what is it? It's one of our widely used words. It's another word for soundness of moral principles, character, complete honesty, a brightness with no masking, with no masking for intent. It means to use your own words, being genuine, no false fronts, open single-handedness, and it goes on and on and on. And all of these words, it's interesting to know, though, that the word integrity isn't used a lot in the Bible. You'd think it would be, but it just isn't one of those words that you hear very often. Recently, I went to, and Jean was there, and Tippy was there, to the school building where they have fixed it. I don't know. I don't think you were there, Mary, but it's all right. I guess you just had... Well, Jean was there because I think Tippy probably spent a lot of time in the particular building. I went just because it was a dear subject to know that improvements had been made. But to the building, the building was built, but it was a new, I call it the jury room. It really is, and it looks like a courtroom, but it's really fabulous. And I heard the word four times in the speeches of acceptance and in, accepting the hard work that was on it and letting it be known was the word integrity. Integrity. But you have a lot of integrity when you go to the doctor. If you go to the doctor and you don't think things are right, you know, there's something's wrong, then chances are you won't be going back. Because your body, you want your body to have the very, very best thing that, you know, that you can have taken care of it. And that's what that is. It's found, now I didn't check this out, but I read it. Let's see, where did I go? Interesting to note that the word integrity appears only 20 times in the American Revised Version of the Bible. And all of these, surprisingly, are to be found in the Old Testament. 5 times the word is used in the book of Job, 7 times in the in Psalms, 5 times in the book of Proverbs, twice in Genesis, and once in 1 Kings. However, even though the word itself does not often appear among the 750,000 words, and I would just love to know exactly how many words there is in the Bible, not that the computer can really tell me. Of the Bible, the idea of honesty, being genuine, moral soundness, is to be found on page after page after page in the Scriptures. There's no substitute for integrity. The Old Testament, we read the stories of 2 men. One is a man devoid of integrity. The other is a man. If I come back with on the wrong lines, because that's what my husband says. The other is a man abounding in integrity. The first man to whom we refer to is Balaam, one of God's prophets during the time when the nation of Israel was making preparations to enter the land of Canaan after the wilderness wandering. The great host of people was moving northward east of the Dead Sea, and soon to pass through the little country of Moab. Realizing that, wait a minute, it happened, his forces could not protect his tiny kingdom, Balak, the king, hit upon a plan by which he hoped to defend himself and his people. He sent for his most trusted advisor to Balaam and offered him great honor and great money if he would pronounce a curse upon the Israelites. At first, he refused to go with these, but as the story unfolds in Numbers 22 and 24, he struggled between his desire to deliver only God's message and his desire to have the honor and the wealth of the king. Balaam moved off in the scene of history, a man of weak character. Through more than 30 centuries since his day, he has had few admirers. He knew what was right, but did not stand firmly for it. He haggled with integrity. Now the second man, going back to the Old Testament again for the story, the second man we mentioned is in 1 Samuel 12. This is the story of Samuel himself. He had led God's people honorably and well during a long lifetime. But as he grew old, the people clamored for a king, that they might be like the nations around them. With God's permission, Samuel gave them their king. Then he called the people together and said unto them, "Behold, I have hearkened unto your voice and all that ye have said to me, and have made a king over you. And now, behold, the king walketh before you. And I am old and gray-headed, and behold, my sons are with you. And I have walked before you from my youth unto this day, and here I am, witness against me before Jehovah and before his anointing, whose ox have I taken. I frauded, or whom I have taken, or whom I have defrauded? Whom have I oppressed, or whose hand have I taken ransom to blind my eyes thereof? And I will restore it to you. And they said, Thou hast not defrauded us, or oppressed us, neither hast thou taken aught of any man's hand. And he said unto them, Jehovah is my witness against you, and his anointing his witness that day, that ye have not found aught in my hand. And they said, He is witness. 1 Samuel 12:1-6. A little later Samuel said, Moreover from me, far be it from me that I should sin against Jehovah in ceasing to pray for you, but I will instruct you in the good and right way. Only fear Jehovah and serve him in truth with all your heart, and consider how great things he hath done for you. 1 Samuel 12:23-24. Here is he leaves the stage of history, a man of integrity and character. So that's two examples, one that had integrity, one that did not have integrity. Integrity means treating people fairly. Leviticus 19:35-36 says, Do not use dishonest standards when measuring length, weight, or quantity. Something that when I was working on this, I got to thinking about people used to accuse butcher of keeping their hands on the scale sometimes. They said, Now take your hands off, you know, or I see your thumb on those scales just to enhance the weight of it. But the Bible clearly says, No, you don't do that. Deuteronomy 25:15, you must have accurate and honest weights. Proverbs 16:11-13, honest scales and balances are from the Lord. All weights in the bag are in the making. So that's something that growing up people were particular about. Is that really a bale of cotton? A bale of cotton weighs so much of this. How much trash is in it? They would deduct for the trash that was in it, and the trash would be the leaves or a burr here and there. And so the farmers would make pretty sure that it didn't have any of that in it. Integrity is giving your word and keeping it. Exodus 8:28-32. Pharaoh said, I will let you go to offer sacrifices to the Lord. Your God is in the desert, but you must not go very far. Now pray for me. Moses answered, As soon as I leave you, I will pray to the Lord, and tomorrow the flies will leave Pharaoh and his officials and his people. Only be sure that Pharaoh does not act deceitfully against. Now, why are they saying that about Pharaoh? Weren't all people, did all people have integrity then? No. By letting the people go after sacrifices. And Moses left Pharaoh and prayed to the Lord. And the Lord did what Moses asked. The flies left Pharaoh and his officials and his people. Not a fly remained. But this time, also Pharaoh's heart hardened and he would not let the people go. Integrity will protect you. In Psalms 25, David prays that integrity and uprightness will protect him. And how can it? Here comes the Psalms and the Proverbs, the ones that have the most. May integrity and uprightness protect me because my hope is in you. Psalms 25:21. Proverbs 2:7-8. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield of those who walk in blameless. Proverbs 10:9. The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. And I noticed in reading those, a lot of it was walking. And they use the word walking, our example of walking. Watch where you're going. Watch what you're doing. Proverbs 11:3, the integrity is the upright guide, but the faithful are destroyed by their unfaithfulness. Proverbs 13:6, righteousness guards the man of integrity, but wickedness overthrows the sinner. Another thing that brought back to mind, like I said, it brings back to mind. My mother was a lecturer like I am. You know, I can go, Dr. Dad, I told you not to do that. Why are you doing that? You know, blah, 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 blah. My mother just had little things that she would say. She'd say, every time we got ready to leave somewhere, just about every time, there, sometimes she'd miss. You know, I'd already gone through the pretty as this pretty does, you know, all those kind of things. She had those things. She would say, look at us and she'd say, remember who you are. Remember who you are. And I think, you know, when I was young, I thought, well, you know who I am. I'm your daughter. And, you know, and that came to mean more to me than that. And then another thing she would say, don't fall down, but if you do, don't get dirty. She had that version of it. And I always wondered why she said that growing up, but then when I got to be a teenager and older, I fully realized what she meant by that, don't get dirty. As I was coming along the path growing, she would again say, don't fall down, but if you do, fall forward. And she meant that if you do have troubles in your life, just keep on going. And so that was something that we used throughout our lives. It wasn't now be home by 10 o'clock and all that kind of stuff. If I had to be home by 10 o'clock, 10:01 was an hour late. If I was supposed to be home at 11, 11:01 was an hour late. And so I quickly learned, not because I was being punished, but you know, but because I knew I had disappointed them in not keeping things on time. The Lord will test and judge your integrity. So, let me see, where did I get? I know. I'm sorry my eyes are playing tricks on me. They always do. This point can also relate to it may be difficult to maintain your integrity sometime. Chronicles. I know, my God, that you test the hearts and are pleased with integrity. All of these things have I given willingly and honest intent. And now I've seen with joy how willingly your people who are here have given to you. Job 2:9, his wife said to him, are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die. She used the word integrity. The Lord hates lies and lack of integrity. Matter of fact, if you don't have integrity, you can't see the Lord someday and live with him. It's a very important word. Proverbs 6:16-17, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood. He hates those things. He tells us he does. Integrity is being reliable with time and keeping schedules. Boy, you know, there's somewhere that I think that I fall particularly short. I try really hard to get here sometimes, and sometimes I just got here, not because y'all walking through late, that's not saying that, but you got here, and that's things interfere sometimes with it. But that's one of the things too. Reliability is being on time and keeping schedules. If Stan was running down the aisle and we were sitting there patiently waiting for him Sunday morning, or your dad, and said, oh, I'm sorry, so Stan's got to just get here a little bit early because we're depending on him. It's not going to make a difference if I walk through a little bit late. I think Mother's husband said, there she is late. Your character can be corrupted by bad company. Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrects good characters. Did you hear that growing up a lot? You know, and you've got to decide who's bad company. Your parents seem to know that right off. It's like they had an antenna for it. Bad company corrupts good morals. Do not be misled. Bad company corrects it. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace along with those who call on the Lord for a pure heart. Integrity will be rewarded. Now, all that is going to be rewarded. Yeah, because Psalms 41:11-12, I know that you're pleased with me, for my enemy does not triumph over me. In my integrity, you hold me up and set me in your presence forever. Your integrity should set the example, and everything set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, soundness of speech that cannot be condemned, and those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about you. So, in ending this, I hope that we'll be reminded of what integrity is. I hope that that you will be able to put somebody along the lines to have more integrity. I don't have that much opportunity anymore except with my great-grandchildren. But I feel like that's a worthy cause. Do the right thing. Don't snitch food off that other ones, even though you love those. Those whatever it is that you're going to snitch off your brother French or what? What do you snitch?
Oh, I just bring on me.
Sometimes you just do it to aggravate them, don't you? Well, these little boys are particularly fond of French fries, one more than the other. And not that it's not fun to have fun, but don't snitch from your neighbor. Don't say it like that. Somebody snitched Jerry's Sunday morning paper from the driveway. Most of the time he stops and picks it up, leans out of the car. You know, I think, oh, he's going to go out of his head. Leans over and picks up the papers we're backing out. But he didn't do that Sunday. He failed to do that. And he was not happy that somebody snitched his Sunday morning paper. That's his favorite one.
They didn't have integrity.
What?
They didn't have integrity.
They went walking and saw, I don't know what they cost now, but it's got to be enough to want to pick it up. You know, it didn't fly out the window. But integrity has to be done in small things. A lot of times we have examples of it, and more is because you expect people to think, I'm not going to do that, you know. When I talked to the doctor one day, he told me about some medicine. He says, you know what? People will sell that. And I'm going, you think I'm going to sell my medicine? You know, how long have you known me? You think I'm going to do that? I'm going, no, if I don't need the medicine, I will take it, beat it to pieces, put kitty litter and coffee grounds in it, and then dispose of it. That's what I'm supposed to do. He said, oh, I know you're not going to do that. But I thought, don't tell me I don't have integrity here. I'm not going to sell that medicine. Most time I don't even want to take it or not take much of it. Thank y'all for listening to me today. Appreciate it. I'm so blessed today to be here with a room full of integrity. And thank you for coming. You know what? That encourages me to see you come. You know what? Every time I see you, speeds me on.
That here, you understand?
You did not start with the prayer.
Sure, I can. And did y'all know that Sharon fell and broke her foot yesterday? Her foot or ankle or something? She was on her. They were at the doctor's office going in or something, and I don't know if it broke and then she fell or she just said it gave out on her, but she broke her ankle. So.
Is she able to get around at all now?
She's going to have surgery. So I honestly don't know. It was, we got the phone call like.
No.
Mid-afternoon or something.
Who did that happen to?
Sharon Simpson.
Oh my.
So.
I didn't get the name.
Yeah, she had two or three treatments of that IVIG and it had done wonders and she was just probably doing too much, but she had doctor's appointments Monday and Tuesday.
Oh my, bless her heart.
She just, so does anybody else know of anybody else who's sick? Is Jean sick or?
No, she's just traveling.
Okay. All right, sure. Heavenly Father, thank you for the day that you've given us. Please be with those that we know of who are away from us, whether they're traveling, the Parkers and the Paulsells and others that we might not know of. Please be with those that are sick, like Sharon Simpson and Brother Wilson and all those that we know of, Brother Brown in our congregation waiting for a hernia surgery and all those that are recovering from surgery. Thank you for the things that you've done for us. Thank you for the things that you've done for us that we don't recognize yet. Thanks for keeping us out of harm's way and helping us to fight the devil and all of his schemes. Please be with those who are spiritually sick, who aren't in the battle right now, or who are struggling with the battle. Please help them to see something, help us to say something that might encourage them to get back on the right path. Help us now as we are focused on your word to put the cares of the world away from us. And help us to honor you and learn more about you so we can share it with others. Forgive us of our many sins and please help keep us safe today as we continue on our day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Did you get the lesson?
I didn't.
I only have the one for you.
That's my share.
Move from the
top. I share a lot.
Okay, and Jean has a note up here. What other topics would fit in the 21st Century Woman series? Does anybody have any suggestion? Well, don't all speak at once. No idea? I do like that. I'm actually going to write.
I don't know what all she's done.
I like this lesson today, this backbiting. When Jean sent it to me, she's very good at this. And when Jean sent it to me and she said, do you think because I asked her if she could do a lesson and I would bring it forward. And when she sent it to me, she said, "Do you think this is okay?" And I was reading and I thought, "Oh, this is really good." She's very good at what she does. So. Okay, the lesson today is on backbiting, gossip, and evil speaking. There's a story that I heard a long time ago that applies to this or whatever. There is a mother talking to, or a child talking to her mother, and she was at odds with a friend because she had repeated she had gossiped about something, and she felt really, really bad. And she says, "Mother, I need to make this right. I really need to make this right." And her mother said, "Well, you can." And she said, "How do I do it?" And she had told her this story, and she said, "This is what you have to do to make it right." And she gave her a big feather pillow. And she said, "Take a feather, and I want you to go to everybody's house in the entire neighborhood and put a feather on their doorstep." She learned, she says, "Just go do it." So then she came back and she had done it, and then she said, "Okay, now I want you to take what you have left, go back and collect all of those feathers and put them back into the pillow." And she said, "I can't do that." And she goes, "Just like once it comes out of your mouth, you cannot take it back." And I've always remembered that. It's a very simple thing, but it does make sense. Once it's out of there, you can do damage control, but you can't make it go away. You can't make it like it was never there.
A similar one is what you can do with children even before something like that happens, and take a paper plate and take a tube of toothpaste and have them squeeze it all out over the plate and then have them try to put it back in
the tube. Well, that was worse. It doesn't work.
It just, yeah.
It doesn't work. There's always some kind of residue or something.
Yeah, and so...
That's a good one.
Our words...
They are powerful. Once they leave the mouth, they're out there. You know, they're out there for all the world to hear or whatever. And we always have to remember, even if we... I mean, I teach this even in the little class. You can be in a room all by yourself in a darkness, and you can do something nobody else, people could see, but God sees everything that you do. So when you're out, you do something, and it's just between you and another, God has seen, He has heard what you've done. It's always something to be aware of. Okay, questions we should ask ourselves before saying anything is, if someone's talking to you, why should I hear this story? Ask yourself that. How will my knowing help the person involved? Is there anything beneficial to help the person involved? And has the person involved given you permission to tell me this story? I had something that was very, very personal to me, and I had told one person. And I was talking to somebody else, and that person revealed something about this. So there's only one person who was... And I went to them, and they go, "Oh, I can't believe they told you that." And I was like, "But I told you, and you not." And then, but I've never forgotten that. And it's been something very hard for me to get past it. And yet I can forgive that person. I would probably never tell them something in that again. But it is very important if something happens, and a lot of times we gossip about something really bad happened to somebody, and you want to forget those things, but there's nothing good that comes from that. We have to remember that. And then another thing I looked at, we are the examples in the world of what a Christian is to be. When people look at us, if we're gossiping or anything like that, people see that. And we are the examples, and they see that. I look at it, in my family, new one is a Christian, and it's almost like you're under a microscope all the time. They almost wait for me. If I was to say something or if I slip with anything, that's what they remember. They don't remember all the good that you've done. They notice that. So I'm on guard with that a lot of times or whatever, but I have to really be careful. It's almost like going into a challenge when I visit family. I pray about it a lot before I'm there or whatever, but it's because I am on guard and I really have to watch myself because, you know, I was told, Jim and I were just talking about this. I said, they think I belong to a cult. They think I'm dumb as a doorknob or whatever. I'm a good person, but yet that I'm following in this cult that these people, you know, it's just all a big cult or whatever. So I really put myself on guard and I really watch myself, but it's somewhat of a good thing because it really makes me check myself and what I'm doing. So, alrighty, let's start the first thing. In Matthew 12:36, But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. That is a very chilling statement to me, because stuff that we say just, you know, just casually, that's there. That's it's almost like we're on a videotape. Where, well, what do they do today? I don't know. But everything is noted there or whatever. You know, so it's what comes out of this mouth, God hears that. People hear that are, but it's all, we have to give an account for everything that we say. It's a very powerful saying.
He even goes further, because he judges the contents of your heart that you don't know anything about. Maybe some of the things in my heart, but God knows. So you have to really work at this, being righteous.
I know. That is very true, though. That's a scary, that one, when I read that, that almost gives me chills. Because you think of all the things, I mean, I can look at everybody in this room and I know we are good people. None of us intend to harm somebody else. But we say things, I can't speak for everybody, it would be just idly that you say things and you're like, oh, I can't, you know.
And yeah, I know that men gossip too, and so they're not immune to it. But women are so verbal. We have a lot of
right.
words throughout our day, unless we're just at maybe a stay-at-home mom. But then we have to, if we're on the telephone or if we're typing on the computer and stuff, those are words that came out of our
right.
our hands. And so we have many, many, many that might be considered idle.
Well, I see, too, it's kind of funny when you say online, you see on Facebook, I'm like, I can't believe people post this on Facebook or whatever, because it is, it's them.
They don't
sitting talking, and I'm thinking, oh, I can't believe you just said that or whatever.
It's the anonymity.
Right.
But they don't realize that
it's not.
It's
yeah.
not
it's
anonymous.
Not. You see it.
And even if it was anonymous, it would still be wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. I know. You see a lot of that. I'm thinking, okay. She's got here. This one I thought was very, it's just a little thing. God doesn't concern himself about little things. And there was like, I was thinking about not one jot or one tittle be removed from this. He knows the hairs on your head. Take one hair, it's a little thing. But he knows all of that. He knows every... You look at... Okay, I'm a big science person. You look at the complexity of the human body, your cells, your organism. He knows every single thing about you. There is no little thing to God. And when we look at this, sin is sin. We classify it like if you have a murderer... I mean, I would never... If I sin, you have Hitler standing next to me, I'm pretty sure everybody would say, oh, he's a bigger sinner than Laura. But if I'm sinning and he's sinning, we're standing before God, we're both guilty. We're both guilty of sin. We tend as we put it on different levels, but it's still sin. It's wrong.
If we consider that, you know, you used to think of sin as a little black mark, but maybe it's a little drop of cyanide. How much cyanide does it take? Do you have to have a whole bottle like a Hitler? Or can one little drop do you in?
We did.
Our life is not made up of a lot of big things.
Right. You know, when I was talking in the Bible class of the kids or whatever, and I showed them how important that one little sin is, I took a white piece of paper, and I took a black marker, and I took one dot, and I put it in there. And I said, if I move this anywhere in the room, can you see it? Can you see that one dot? And they're like, yeah, I see it. It stands out really easy. And I thought, my husband Jim, when he was in the Marine Corps, he would do the night vision goggles where the plane is pitch black, it's dark, and they wear these goggles. But they can see a candle or anything light up for miles and miles away. And I've often thought about that. That's that sin. It just lights up like that, and you see it. And that one sin, if you have something that's just the purity, and that one thing spots it, you know, there should be no blemish in that way or whatever. So it does, when you look at it like that, it makes it, there's no little white lie or little, it's sin. It's an ugly, ugly thing to God.
And ultimately kills us.
Yes. It's an ugly, ugly thing. Okay, seven things are an abomination to him. Does everybody have a sheet? Okay. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift and running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among brethren. And that is so sad to me, because Amanda Jackson and I were talking one time, and we said, you know, my my family, my sisters in Christ, and my brothers in Christ, I'm so much closer to them than to my family. And I just broke down crying, and I was like, that is so true. I said, you know, we have people in our family that I don't know that I would ever associate with if I was, you know, they're in my family or whatever, and I love them. But they are family. I've known them all my life or whatever. But my church family is so much more precious to me in that way. They share something that my earthly family, unfortunately, does not understand, does not get. And for someone to sow discord among us is a really sad thing to me. And obviously, I mean, that's something that God hates. And when you think about that word hatred, that's a big thing. That's a big thing coming from us, but when you hear the Lord say, you know, that's really big. Okay. What motivates evil speaking? Okay, we're going to read about Diotrephes. Bonnie, do you want to read that one?
I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds which he does, grating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church.
That is so sad to me that, you know, here it is. He's there, but he wants to be seen in the world in a certain way. But what, when you think about discord among brethren, that's a big, you know, thing or whatever. But look how sad that is. He forbids those who are wishing to, then he puts them out of the church. And I'm thinking, that's almost one of those things where being raised Catholic, where you'd be like, you'd be afraid, you'd step out of the aisle because you're like lightning was going to strike. That was the big, and that's one of those things to me when I think about that. I'm thinking, here he is in the church, and you know, we look at that when the apostles were on the earth, when they were going forth preaching or whatever, and you just look at that, and we have it. I mean, we have the whole gospel right now, but they walked on feet or on foot. They really went out and preached the gospel. And I mean, to have this, it makes it so much harder for them. And the things that they had to face, it's just a very ugly, sad thing. Anybody have anything? Don't let me do all the talking today.
The apostles, though, struggled with that, too. They wanted to be the most important.
Yes.
Who's the greatest in the kingdom. And so here's Diotrephes. He wanted to be the greatest in the church. And we fall the victim of that sometimes, too. Somebody wants to be seen as the most important.
On the earth,
and,
yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know, just like, I remember a little story when I was growing up, and it was called, like, I Pitch. You know, and these people were playing ball and stuff, and this one kid was like, well, I'm going to pitch. Well, no, I'm going to pitch. No, I'm going to pitch. It's my ball, and I'm going to take it home if I don't pitch. And sometimes we do that, and that's sowing discord when we can't get along.
And there is no small part in the church.
We all have a part, and it might not be the one that gets up in front of everybody. And I think the greatest people are the ones who serve and do things behind the scenes, and they're not wanting credit for it. They're just working for the God, not for the glory themselves.
We see a lot with like the men, the maintenance of the building. Mm-hmm. We come all the time, and we. You know, it's
and
here.
It's
we
done.
Come. It's
yeah.
done. Yes. So, y'all appreciate this one time. Mark came home, and every day when they would walk in the door, whatever, at 4 o'clock, there's a show that was on the Rifle, but it was Western, and I love Western. But he would come in, I'd be sitting down. They're coming home, so I would wind down. He'd be like, and Mark looked at me in all his innocence and goes, what do you do all day long? And I said, well, I don't know, between the soap operas and the bonbons. It's just, I don't know. I said, do you think there's like a laundry fairy that comes and does all this or who cleans the bathroom? But they don't see it. We don't see all the things that is done and all that or whatever. Yes, I know. Okay, idleness. Second one. See, Cliffy, do you want to read that one?
And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but also gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies.
I think anybody who's ever been a good housewife. When people say, well, you know, or stay at home, what do you do all day long? And I'm like, oh, if I had 27 hours, I would spend 27 hours. But there's like, there's never enough time in the day for me to get all done that I want to do. The one thing I love about being, I've been blessed to be able to be at home. The one thing that I love about that is I can go out and do things with sisters or four other, you know, four other people that I wouldn't necessarily be able to do if I held a job. So it's very nice in that, but there are, it's kind of funny because even when I days when I don't feel good and I'm, doctor says, listen to your body, sit down. So when I sit, I can't just sit. I have to do something when I'm sitting. So I'll either, you know, I'll crochet or do something like I'm working on Christmas presents. And so I'm like, I'm doing, you know, different things like that, or I'm trying to do something like that. I try to do the, I'll do coupons or I'll, you know, do something like that when I sit. I can sit and read, or, you know, that's a good time if you want to sit down, read your Bible, do different things like that. So we shouldn't be idle. There's nothing wrong with taking some time, like, to rest during the day or whatever, but when you get idle where you have so much time where you're going gossiping, you need a new hobby. You have way too much time in your... And Mary is not leaving because of me, she told me.
No, I'm not.
Have a good day, Mary. Okay, self-importance. Carol, do you want to read that one?
No.
No? Sorry. Okay. He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with one who flatters with his lips. I like that one. We can have, to me here, I'm going to put Faith on. This is like a lot of guys. No, no, listen. A lot of guys tell you what you want to hear. They're like, oh, you look beautiful, da, da, da. And that'll appeal to, you know, you want to be told you're pretty. You want to be told. But I want somebody to love me for what's on the inside. As the beauty fades, there's a saying, dumb is forever, beauty fades. But it's what is on the inside. And God looks at your heart, not this. He made all this, so he already knows it's what your heart is that's important. But we shouldn't... Carol brought the lesson on integrity, which so much ties in with this or whatever. We shouldn't be... It says, goes about a talebearer revealing secret. We shouldn't want to be around somebody like that. Do not associate with one who flatters with his lips, who always says that. Because which can be a bad thing, can almost look at somebody that and be skeptical. I try not to be judgmental, but when somebody's doing all that, you're kind of like, you're waiting. It's like the calm before the storm. Why is he doing that? Or why is he? Yes, and that could also be bad or whatever. But somebody... If you're standing on your integrity, you speak for yourself. There's not a whole lot needed there to do anything. So if you're doing all these things, you shouldn't have to tell something about somebody else to gain popularity or anything like, you know, you're going about it the wrong way. You're missing the big picture in that. But when somebody is just flattering with his lips, that's not a good thing. And they're just doing it. It's a very selfish thing. They're doing it for themselves. Okay, arrogance. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceases, for the faithful disappear from among the sons of men. They speak idly, everyone with his neighbor. With his flattering lips and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips. And the tongue that speaks proud things, who have said, with our tongue we will prevail, our lips our own. Who is the Lord over us? Scary scripture again, you know. When you read these, and you know, and I love this lesson that she brought. We don't always go to these. These are not the most common scriptures. But it tells you how God feels about all this. I mean, it's just, and when he said there is no little thing with God or whatever in that way, it's very important. Here they are, for the godly man ceases. That is a scary thought in that way or whatever. In the beginning when I said when people look at us, they see what a Christian should be. And what do they see when they look at us? They should see somebody who stands with integrity, who doesn't gossip, who doesn't. And as what Carol said, if you fall forward. If you know, fall, don't get dirty. We all are very capable of sinning. But if you do that, you need to repent, pull yourself up, make it right, and move forward. But we need to pull away from these things because it's very, very bad. The backbiting and all the gossip and everything. And I think it's very hard, I think, for women in the workplace. Like Carol being a teacher, when I used to be up at the school and I would sub, and I never thought men used to gossip. I was wrong. But you go in like the teachers, the den or whatever, and I'd be like, oh my, it would be horrible because people would be, hi, and then they'd walk in there and it was like the knife came out and they was just stabbing each other in the back and it gets ugly. And it's just, and I'm, that's just where I saw, because that's where I was a lot when the kids were at school or whatever. But in any kind of workplace or whatever, you know, people are really friendly to your face a lot of times, and then they'll throw you under the bus the second I'm, you do have to be careful. And it is really hard. We get like that. We need to not be around people like that. As she was saying, the good or bad company corrupts good moral. That's very important. We need to not, you know, it's just like we wouldn't go sit in a bar and drink 7-Up or whatever. We should pull ourselves away from those kind of situations. If at all possible, we should not be in those situations. So,
Stan has a sermon.
Is that what you're...
Yes. I was on arrogance, and I'm going to go to hypocrisy in them.
Steve has a sermon on give no place to the devil. And the way he starts it out is like, if you had a big dinner party and you had all these engrables, you know,
cards,
little cards and stuff, and you go to a lot of trouble to find out who's going to sit next to who because you want them to get along and you want them to have good conversation and things, you wouldn't want to have one right next to you that said the devil.
Yes.
You wouldn't, like a kid, you know, they save places at lunch. You wouldn't dream of saving a place. Come sit right here by me. But we do that with our companions sometimes. And we invite the devil to have an opportunity in our lives.
We do.
And it's...
We ask for a lot of things. Very true.
But when we... Unfortunately, when we do these things, we are... an instrument of the devil, and
isn't that a scary thought? He's using
somebody else's life,
and we are the instrument in that. And that is that really. See, that's humbling in the way, you know, which we should never get, as I always say, too big for our britches. Mom always used that word or whatever. God can very quickly put us in our place, very quickly, and it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, Lazarus, you know, you look all the way up to the you know. I mean, we had Solomon. You know, Solomon fell. Not that he's in this one order. But it doesn't matter who we are. We are all God's children. We are all capable of falling. And we always have to remember, it doesn't matter what rank you hold on this earth, you are a servant of God. You are to do His thing or whatever. So.
And if we get, even if we're doing well, then He can get us by being prideful.
Yes.
Because look how good I'm doing.
And I think that's where some of the arrogance comes in there or whatever. Like,
it does.
Who is God to, you know? And we do, and you see it over
good.
And over
I'm
again
so
in the Bible.
Compared to them.
Well, it's kind of not in the same thing, but I was just telling Stan, I said, we are getting, I call it the monsoon season at the Godfrey house. Everything that could break is breaking at our house. But then I look at all the health problems and all the different things, and I'm saying, we're good. We have this. We're blessed. It may be tight, but we have the finances to do this. And I, you know, you have to look at stuff like that or whatever. But yes, we have to be careful of where we are in that. Okay. Hypocrisy. Let's see if I can at least get to this. All who hate me whisper together against me. Against me they devise my hurt. An evil disease, they say, clings to him. And now that he lies down, he will rise up no more. Even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. That is so sad to me. That is so sad to me in the Book of Psalms. It's, you look at that and there. Everybody on this earth is very capable of falling and faltering in their life or whatever. The one true thing that we have is God. We know that He never fails. He never. But it is that you can feel His pain when we're riding in this or whatever. That hurts when you do things like what you were saying, which is I think a good example, like the toothpaste on the plate or whatever. You could never get that back in there. So we say things that are we say things to one another, and even I was talking to somebody the other day about marriage. It's a newly married couple or whatever. And I said, we had a class here at the building Stan taught years ago, and one of the things said in the class was, we say things to our spouse that we would never say to anybody else, and we think it's okay. And it's not. We get, but, and that's kind of the same. It's not backbiting and gossip, but it's the evil words coming out of our mouth. And we get so casual with them. We would never, if we were just starting to date that person, we would never say that. And we shouldn't. We should love them so much that respect them in that way. And that's another thing that ties in here, is respecting. If you go back to the treat others the way you want to be treated, there are things that, you know, I saw somebody in the family I hadn't seen in like 20 years or whatever, and they came up to me and they go, "My, you've gained a lot of weight." And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, I am so glad you told me that, because I did not know that. If you had not told me that, I didn't say that. But I'm thinking, like, what in my mind, what gives you the right that you would be okay to say that to me? Because how could that not come across? How in any way would that make me feel good about myself? And it wouldn't. So, and we have to think about that when we say things, because I'm like thinking, okay, yeah, I knew that. Thank you. I'm so glad you told me that, because I did not know. But I was like, oh, you know, but we do. We say things to one another, and we can't do that. And you see the pain.
And you can't smack them. That's fine, too.
Yes, it is. It is illegal to reach out and touch people.
You don't look good in orange.
Yes, I just caught what you were saying. Orange is not, stripes are not my color. They go the wrong way. Yeah. I know. So you have to be, no. Okay.
But we can't be hypocritical either. I mean, we can't go, oh, you look wonderful, yeah.
Right.
And when you're...
Don't lie,
when
that's
don't
the flattering
mean,
lips.
Yes. When you don't mean what you say.
But you can keep your mouth shut.
You can keep your mouth shut. That's one of those mom's sayings. Everybody's mom probably had that saying. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all.
I just listened to a sermon when I was sitting here or whatever, waiting, because I couldn't get in the building with the new doors or whatever. But it was in the immortal words of Thumper's mama, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. It's very simple, but it's very true. And I'm a talker. You guys know. So when you talk, whatever, sometimes you have to bind your tongue, because you don't want to say the wrong thing. And there are times when you should just not say anything. And sometimes that can be very powerful, you know, just not saying anything, because they know that there is disdain with that. You know, I mean, they know that you are not pleased or whatever what they said. And sometimes that is much more powerful than any words you can say.
Sometimes we do have to say something to stand up for truth.
Right.
And that we might be the only person that they ever contact that lets them know that faith only isn't found in the Bible or something. And so we might be God's door for them to hear the gospel. And so we can't just say, oh, well, it's not a good time. It's not a, you know, if I say it's going to hurt their feelings. Much better to hurt their feelings now about something like that than to have at the end of time go, why didn't you tell me? Because I...
You know what, too? And something that is very true. Because, I mean, if you say it in an ugly way, it's a different thing. But if you're saying something in a loving, kind way, truly for their good, mm-hmm. I mean, not everybody, you know, I dealt with something in my family when I was just some kid. And I knew they were mocking me. You could tell by smirks on the faces and stuff or whatever. They really wanted me to go to the congregation where they were going to. And Jim and I had talked about it, you know, and I could think of Paul be like, I cannot in good conscience go to this place. They have a Starbucks. They have a big... I can't go to this place. It has nothing to do with God. I mean, it's just... not even on the cuff of it to me or whatever. And they were kind of joking about it, and they were setting me up for a fall. And I just didn't respond. And I think that was more powerful. And I talked when we came back here, and I said, oh, it's just, I said, do I go because they came with me when I was here? But I said, yeah, I want them to come back, but I'm like, they heard the gospel, they know the gospel, they're not receiving, that's through them or whatever. But I can't go in good conscience there, because I would have been sinning, and I can't do that or whatever. But it was a battle with the, there was the, I could just, they were smirking, and there was a whole group of them, and I'm just like,
just kind of wait.
And I was holding back tears because it bothers me. This is family doing this, and I think they feel more at ease. They wouldn't do that necessarily with somebody else, but they were doing it to me, and you know that there's stuff being said behind your back before you even get there. It was like literally, I was set up, and then there it is. It was like a surprise or whatever. And I kind of, before I go, I pray a lot because I kind of know what I'm going into. But I have to lead in that time as the very best example that I can be. But it's hard. That night when I was talking to my husband, I said, okay, I'm ready to come home. And I was so happy to be among my brethren here because it's just that cradle that, you know, that grips you or whatever that makes you feel like you're back home again.